Well, gardening in a place like Wisconsin or Minnesota, a northern climate, has its own challenges. And today we'll be looking at a new book that talks about gardening traditions in the north and what tips and tricks you might be able to use in your own garden. Larry Mueller here with my guest on the phone with me, Mary Lar Scheer. She is the editor for Northern Gardener. It's a bi-monthly magazine of the Minnesota State Horticulture Society. And her new book is called Northern Gardener, or The Northern Gardener, From Apples to Zinnias. It's a book any gardener would appreciate. It's filled with advice, lore, and some great photos and illustrations. So looking forward to hearing what you have to say as we visit with her. What plants do you struggle to grow in your area? How do you extend your gardening season? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post a photo or question on our Facebook page. Certainly love to hear from you. And Mary Scheer, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry. I'm happy to be here.
I think, you know, it'd be fun to start out by talking about the Northern Gardener magazine. How did that get started?
Well, it's been around for about 145 years. And Northern Gardener is the publication of the Minnesota State Horticultural Society. And, you know, way back, more than 100 years ago, the society started publishing minutes of its meetings. And people would present papers, and that was how it began. And then for many years, it was called Minnesota Horticulturalist, which was, you know, a magazine for home gardeners. And then in about the year 2000, they changed the name to Northern Gardener to reflect the, you know, that it covers more than just Minnesota, but anyone who's gardening in really zone 2 or 3 down to about 5, which would be most of you guys in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm going to say that pretty well covers the base, all the bases for Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And this book is kind of inspired by the magazine, wasn't it?
Well, it's inspired by the Horticulture Society's history. In 2016, the Horticultural Society had its 150th anniversary. And as part of that, we started digging around for the magazine, you know, into the history and writing about some of the historical figures and some of the what we called heritage plants, plants that kind of came out of Minnesota and have been growing really well in the north. And at the same time, the Minnesota Historical Society wanted to write a book of garden wisdom, and so the two things sort of merged together, and that's where how the book came about.
Yeah, it's really a cool idea, I think. And you have, I think you say from apples to zinnias, so you're pretty much and everything in between. And you talk about things like climate. Garden design and so forth. You talk about fruits. How did you decide what your chapters would be?
Well, you know, in order to cover, you know, there's just so much to write about. And this is, you know, it's kind of a basic gardening book geared toward the north. There's so much to cover, so we decided to use the A to Z format. And once you've got to come, you know, you've got to come up with something for Q and X. But just went, you know, what logically do people want to know about gardening in the north? And so we cover things like, you know, evergreens, which we call junipers, a chapter on junipers, and then all sorts of the invaders you have in your yard, like bugs. Weeds, of course, had to have a chapter. And so we covered the kind of things that most gardeners want to know about, and we tried to do it in fairly short chapters, so if you were interested in one thing, you could dip into that chapter and then bounce around to another chapter when you were interested in something else.
It was interesting to me, just thinking about it, what surprised you as you were looking for articles and other information in the archives? Were there things that, oh my gosh, or oh my goodness?
Well, one thing is, I mean, the level of kind of dangerous chemical use that went on in about the 1920s and 30s into the 40s was really surprising to me. I mean, people would take arsenic and roll it up with bran and molasses and put it under their trees in order to get the, you know, kind of burrowing critters. And that was like, whoa.
Whoa.
But at the same time, when DDT came out in the 1940s, people were writing in the magazine about, this is just too good, almost. Like, there's got to be something dangerous about it. So on the one hand, there was a lot of chemical usage that was, to me, surprising. But on the other hand, they were also a lot of people who were organic gardeners out of choice. You know, even in the 30s and 40s, when we think chemical use was really very high.
Yeah. Chapters that you have a nice ABC compost system described in them. And we were just talking about composting last week. I do a show on Fridays called Garden Talk, and it replays on the first hour of it Saturday mornings from 7 to 8. But someone was asking about composting, and you have a nice compost system described. Tell us about it.
Right. This is from a woman named Greta Kesenich. She lived in Hopkins, Minnesota, and described in the magazine how she composted oak leaves. And I think leaves are just like one of the best things you can add to your garden. So she would have three different piles. One was the leaves that she raked in the fall, and she used those to cover the tender plants in her garden. The second group were the leaves she had used, she had removed the previous spring. So they were leaves that had already kind of composted, and she put those in her bins and let them sit for the summer. And then the third pile, basically, were the ones that had sat all summer and were decomposed, and these would go into her garden. But the use of leaves and shredded leaves for mulch and compost is, like, I think it's just gold. And I know, doesn't Goldbrook Garden give that away?
Yes.
So, yeah, that's good stuff. I've thought about driving my car down there to get some.
Goldbrook Gardens and other gardens and other botanical gardens do something similar. So it's really a very cool thing. As I look through the book, you know, I flipped it open to a page, and I thought, oh, you know, I never thought of this, and I don't know why I wouldn't have thought of it, but there's a chapter dealing with colorful flowers, and it's there's a heading that says something like colorful flowers that don't shout at your house.
Right. That's from there was a book written by a woman named Daisy Abbott. It was the first book for Northern home gardeners. It was called The Northern Gardener Week by Week. And she had some great advice that still applies about when you're selecting plants, the first thing you have to do is look at your house. What color is your house? And, you know, what's the style of your house? And start from that when you're doing the design for your garden. So if you have a really modern house, you probably can't put a cottage garden in the front of it.
Yeah, and even colors. I hadn't even thought about color. You know, I just plant what I like without thinking about the color of my green house.
Yes, but you may have an eye for it. You may go, ooh, I put that, bright red plant and it doesn't look good, or that purple one, whatever it is, and move it. I think a lot of gardeners are constantly moving their plants around to make things look the way they want them to look.
Yeah, and so I guess maybe I was doing it without even realizing what was going on there in the back of my mind. So, yeah, your book concentrates on Minnesota, but certainly the growing zones are, as you say, are pretty much the same as we've got here in Wisconsin. So that's good. And you have design information and some practical tips for landscape design that I thought were kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, one thing we discovered in doing the research was that, design trends come and go and have been for a long time. But right now, most people like a more of a casual style. That is, they'll curve their beds, and they We'll choose plants that are, layered within the bed. So we've tried to talk in that chapter a little bit about setting up paths and, thinking about some of the practical things when you're designing your gardens. For instance, mowing your yard. I used to have a house that was on a hill, and we eventually did put in some rock work along the side of the hill because mowing that hill got really old fast. So you got to consider the practical items when you're designing your garden.
Yeah. And I saw you have a chapter on apples, and I'm wondering, why was it important to include a chapter on apples?
Well, that was, again, from the history perspective. Apples are basically the reason that the Horticultural Society came into existence. And there's a famous story from the 1800s, way back, that a journalist named Horace Greeley said, "I could never live in Minnesota because you cannot grow apples there." And that was true at the time. And then when you think of it, this is where the birthplace of the Honeycrisp apple and all the new apples. But at the time, the climate was so severe, and most of the apples that were brought here by settlers were from the East Coast, and so they couldn't survive here. It took generations of crossbreeding and hybridization in order to get apples that would survive in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think it's in...
Or Wisconsin.
Or Wisconsin, for that matter, and now we have lots of apples.
Yeah, now it's a great apple-growing region, because of all the breeding work that's been done.
Yeah. One of the things about Honeycrisp I've found, and we've talked about a little bit on the show from one time or another, is that the original, the Honeycrisps that were developed in Minnesota were developed on a certain type of soil, in a certain type of soil. And you need to have, in order to sort of replicate that type of apple somewhere else, you need to have a soil type that matches fairly well anyway, wouldn't you think?
Right, and that's why the Honeycrisp apples that you buy in January don't taste quite the same as the ones you buy in October, because the ones you're buying in January may come from Washington State. That's typically where they're coming from. Yeah. They do have a slightly different taste, I think.
Yeah, no.
That's not scientific. That's my opinion. So.
Well, my opinion and your opinion are the same, so we're going to call it
true.
the Mueller-Scheer law on that. Mary Scheer, our guest today, she is the author of From Apples to Zinnias, The Northern Gardener. And we'll give you a chance to join in with your questions or comments. She'll be with us till 12:30 today. Maybe you've got a question about your garden. I hope you'll join us, and we'll be back with her right after the news. We're talking about gardening in a northern climate like Wisconsin's with our guest today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Our guest, Mary Lar Scheer, is the editor of Northern Gardener. It's a bimonthly magazine of the Minnesota State Horticulture Society. And she has a new book out. It's called The Northern Gardener, From Apples to Zinnias. You may have a tip for growing in a cold climate, or maybe you have a question or want to know a little bit more about growing in cold zones. I hope you'll join in our conversation. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, or you can also post on our Facebook page. Certainly, we would love to hear from you. So give a call, post a question on our Facebook, or send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. Some of the, we talked a bit about apples there and the Honeycrisp apple. And before we go to the phones, what are some of the favorite trees for our northern gardens? The best trees.
Best trees?
Yeah.
I have some personal favorites. I really like some of the oaks that we have. The northern pin oak is a beautiful tree, I think. does really well here. And it holds on to its leaves kind of long. So if you're one who likes to really rake up their yard neatly, that may not be the best choice for you. There's some beautiful maples that I think are lovely. I know a lot of garden designers really recommend the honey locust. But that's a tree that should be planted more. It's a healthy tree. And I think that's kind of one of the things we have to consider now. The most important thing now is actually just to plant a variety of trees so that we don't have a situation like we've had with Dutch elm disease and now emerald ash borer. In Minnesota, we're just still kind of getting into the emerald ash borer, but we have millions of ash trees.
Yeah.
And that's going to be problematic.
Yeah, well, we know all about that here in Wisconsin, for sure.
Yeah.
Mike in Madison has something for us. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I'm wondering if there are techniques that can be used to extend the growing zone. So, for instance, taking an apple or a nectarine tree or something that grows in a zone 6 or 6.5, and planting it in a zone 5. Are there ways you can insulate around the roots or protect the tree so that it will survive being placed into a zone where it's not normally recommended?
Yeah. Good question. What do you think, Mary?
Well, I have to admit, I have a peach that I've planted in my yard. I don't know if it's going to survive this winter. It's pretty tricky. I mean, you can choose a location for the tree that is protected, so like a microclimate. That's one thing you can do. The other thing is to choose the variety you pick carefully. So, for instance, this peach that I've got is allegedly a Zone 5 peach. Now, I'm technically in Zone 4, but I live in St. Paul, so I've got a little urban heat island effect. So maybe I'm saying I'm Zone 5. I'm close to Zone 5. I don't think I actually am, but I'm close. So, I mean, you can do things like that. And I know people who have, like, built straw barriers around a tree to keep it warmer during the winter. I mean, but you can only do that for so long. The tree's going to get bigger, and I don't know, and I'm not willing to do that. But so picking the right variety and then planting it really carefully, and then also thinking, how much do I want a nectarine? Maybe I could grow a pear or something else that's a little more well-suited to the climate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking you could take some of this closed-cell building insulation, like a 4x8 sheet, and cut it so that you could then piece it around underneath the dirt. And then that would extend out away from the root several feet in all directions. And just leave it there all year long, and it would help to reflect the earth, the heat from the earth, and also insulate it from the cold ambient temperatures.
You know, I've never heard of anybody doing that, but, you could always try it if you wanted to. You may be getting a little past my pay grade here.
Yeah, I was thinking, the first thing I thought about was water and making sure that
there's issues like water, and what about if it gets too moist? Are you going to have problems with rot? It might be worth an experiment. I wouldn't spend a lot of money. Don't go broke trying to do it. And that's kind of my advice on all this sort of thing, is if you pick a tree or a plant that is iffy for your zone, make sure you can afford to have it die. That's just a practical matter. And some people say, I want to grow a Japanese maple, which is hard to grow up north, here in Minnesota. I want to grow one, and I'll just try it. Sometimes they have to buy more than one Japanese maple to get that to work.
Mike, I want you to try that, and then I want you to report back.
Yes, if that works, I'd love to hear about it for the magazine.
I'll let you know. I was going to order some trees from a genetics producer out in California, so I'll
All right. Let us know, Mike. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You got a question to ask or maybe a story to tell about gardening in the state of Wisconsin or in a northern climate? I'd love to hear from you. 800-642-1234. I found that you have an entire chapter on kraut.
Yes. Well, on preserving, that's on preserving the harvest. Because you know what? You get a big garden and suddenly you've got a lot of cabbage or cucumbers, and what do you do with that? People have been preserving their food for a long, long time. There's a lot of great methods for doing it, including making, you know, sauerkraut.
Yeah, and so you've got a whole chapter devoted to how to do that.
Mm-hmm, right.
I like that idea. What's your view on rose cones? Yes or no on rose cones?
Big no. My view is no on rose cones. Because there's some, you know, they used to use those all the time to protect roses, the sort of more delicate roses through the winter. But they discovered that oftentimes it would create sort of this mini climate, and it would make them actually more prone to disease because of moisture. You can cover up roses with other things, with leaves or you can bury the roses, the so-called Minnesota tip, where you dig a trench and you kind of lift the plant up by one side of its roots and lay it down in the trench and then cover up the trench. That will keep them through the winter.
It's a lot of work, though.
But it's a lot of digging.
That's one reason why I really have never had roses.
Mm-hmm.
I had roses once, but I also found that there are certain insects that enjoy roses a lot.
Yes.
And so I kind of got away from roses. Well, this is the time of year for dreaming about spring, getting ready to start growing plants inside. And another option, and you talk about this in your book, is winter sowing. Talk about that.
Well, winter sowing is a method for starting seeds outdoors. It works really well with perennial plants that are hardy to our area. So actually, I'm just about to put out some winter sowing containers with black-eyed Susans and coneflowers. I'm doing a little butterfly garden. And so I'm going to start some of those from seed. And you get a plastic milk jug, or I use those salad containers.
Yeah.
Put a hole in the bottom, and you fill it with soil, starting mix type soil, and put this, plant your seeds, cover them up, and then you put them outside, and you just wait. And late April, early May, the seeds sprout, and you do have to open and close the little greenhouse, because what you've done is create a mini greenhouse that the seeds can grow in. And then you kind of open and close them until it gets to be time to plant. It's a great way to start. If you want to use seeds to save money, it's a wonderful way to start a lot of perennial seeds easily.
Yeah. Jerry in Stockbridge, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Larry, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Years ago, I don't know why, I just always had the desire to grow, looking in seed catalogs, to grow pawpaw trees. As a kid, my sister went to school at Michigan State, and we used to drive through, and at a roadside stand, I was about 10, 11 years old, we stopped, and my dad bought a couple of pawpaws, really loved them, and came up here. I've got about 4 wooded acres around the house, and I've got them in a kind of a depressed little area, although the entire area is really well sheltered. But pawpaws being a secondary growth, they don't really care for direct sun.
They're an understory tree.
Yeah, exactly. And I did get fruit after, I don't know, 4 years or so, a few of them, and I did take some seeds the next year, and I learned about pollinating. with a hairbrush, flower tree to tree, cross pollinating. And I did get fruit, and I did cleaned off the seeds, put them in sterile soil, had them set up in some permeable baggies, but left them a little open, refrigerated them for about 4 months, then bud and planted them indoors and sprouted them in. I couldn't get tall enough seed pots, so I used a PVC pipe, section of PVC, because of the very long taproot that they grow, even from seed. And I planted three of those that sprouted. One survived, but from runners off the original three trees I had in, and I've got about 16 now growing. And they're spreading out in typical circular fashion. They do the pawpaw patch, and it's spreading through the woods out behind our lawn in the front of the house. So, and this is well above where you would normally find
them. Right. Where do you live, Jerry? Stockbridge.
I am right along the east shore of Lake Winnebago, about maybe 10 miles south of the north shore of the lake.
Well, you know, pawpaws seem to be somewhat adaptable, because I actually visited a garden this fall of a man who's in Northfield, Minnesota, which is north of you by, at least 100 miles. And he also has pawpaws. And he's done almost exactly what you've done, which is he gets some fruit, he saves the seed, he grows them inside, and he has another long tubular type device that he uses to grow them. And he actually's got probably, I would guess, a half a dozen or more plants that are producing fruit. And the pawpaw fruit is one of those things, I think you love it or you hate it. I thought it was delicious. But not everybody loves it.
In some specialty restaurants, the more high-tier restaurants, that there may be a market for sherbet.
Yeah, it tastes like custard, I thought. It's good, and they're kind of a fun thing to try to grow, but you've got to have some property to do it on, because they do, like you say, they need some shade, and they're a little bit of a scrubby-looking tree. That's my...
In your measured opinion?
In my opinion, it's a little scrubby-looking, but they are, the fruit is wonderful. It's wonderful.
Jerry, thank you so much. That's a great story, and appreciate you contributing to the show. I want to give Randy in Minneapolis a chance to join us. Randy, hello.
Hello. How are you doing, Larry?
Great. What's on your mind today?
I've had four trees, maple trees, that have the root problems. They grow above the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's typical of a maple.
Yeah.
How do you prevent that from happening?
You don't.
But how big is the tree? Are they mature?
Some are, very, very mature, but somewhere 4 feet across. Mm. Other ones are, 2 feet across.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's just how they grow. And what you do is, if your problem is you want to grow grass underneath them, you probably don't grow grass underneath them. You find some kind of a ground cover. I don't think there's any way to have them not do it. It's kind of a characteristic of a maple. And I had a maple in my former yard, and as it got older, it did the same thing. The tree roots started to come up, got a little bare in between the roots.
And you really can't cover them with soil.
No, I don't think you really want to do that.
No.
And in mowing, you don't want to mow over them, because you could harm the tree by cutting up the roots, accidentally.
That was the other option, chop up the root and get rid of it. But, again, you're damaging the tree.
I
don't think you want to do that. I mean, is it interfering with something, something important? I mean, or is it just you don't like the look of it?
I don't like the look of it.
You might be able to go with a mulch.
Yeah, a mulch, a light mulch, or some plants that you can tuck in between the roots. Like, I mean, I've seen people grow hostas under trees,
yeah,
or other kind of a ground cover. I mean, the Canadian ginger is a beautiful plant. I don't know how that would do, but it might do okay.
But you're not going to get Kentucky bluegrass in there. For sure, Randy. So mulching and other plants, hosta, you're right about hostas, Mary. You see that a lot. And, of course, they will compete a bit for moisture. So.
Right. That's kind of the trade-off is it looks better. You have to do a little extra watering to make sure everything is thriving.
Yeah.
Under the tree. I wish I had more ideas. I know we have an article coming up in about 2 issues in Northern Gardener on what to put under trees. So I'll hopefully have more suggestions then.
But, how do people find out about the magazine or look at it?
You can go to northerngardener.org to find out a little more about the organization and the magazine. The magazine is sold in bookstores. I think there's a few in Wisconsin and also in some grocery outlets here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take another call. Barbara in Milton, you are up next. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Good afternoon to you. I have a question, actually a clarification. I rent and just have a patio with concrete and that, so it's nothing enclosed. And you were talking about planting perennials outside in containers. Now, when I plant it during the cold weather, do I just leave it out there?
Well, what I was talking about earlier was winter sowing, which is your seed starting in containers to get the seeds to get new plants. But you can certainly grow perennials in containers depending on which ones you choose. You'd have to do some extra winter protection or then bring them in the house for a while. But you can grow some perennials in containers.
Yeah.
Okay, so what type of cold weather do I start? When winter starts or towards the end of winter or...
If you want to do the winter seed sowing, and if you go online, Google winter sowing, and you'll find lots of articles about it, you can start that actually any time. You can start it in December, you can start it in January, you can start it in February. If you want to do, because what you want is the seed, if it's a perennial seed, you want it to have a freeze-thaw cycle. And that's kind of with some of these perennial seeds, that's how they germinate is after they've had a freeze-thaw cycle. If you wanted to start like other annuals using the winter sowing method, you could actually do it in like March and April.
Well, it would be perennials that are fairly small plants because I just have a little bit of soil in front of my patio where I would be able to plant. So I would put the seeds in dry dirt, put it outside, and then just leave it.
No, you would put the seeds in a plastic container with seed starting mix. So it has a cover. It creates basically a little mini greenhouse.
Okay.
And that would, once the seed germinates and you've got a little baby plant, then you could plant it out in your little area of dirt, your garden or your patio.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. I like the idea. I was glad I was listening today because I like flowers and like to plant them. But when you're on Social Security at the low end, you kind of look for sales here and there, but they're not always the sales of the plants you want. So this sounded like a good idea.
Yeah.
Check out winter sowing online for the complete instructions.
Yeah.
Okay.
All
okay.
Right. Barbara, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. So how many years has it been now? With the magazine and the organization?
The Horticulture Society has been around for 151 years now, and the magazine's been around for about 145.
Wow, that's a long, long history. And Mary, it's fun talking with you today, and I appreciate you taking time to be with us. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Larry.
Mary Lar Shear, our guest today. She is the editor for Northern Gardener, the bi-monthly magazine of the Minnesota State Horticulture Society. She won the 2009 Botanical Award for Best Garden Blog in Minnesota, and her book is called From Apples to Zinnia, The Northern Gardener. That's the primary title. So great to have her along. Thank you for listening in. Tomorrow, we'll talk about childhood obesity and what can be done to reverse the trend. Stay with us.